Hello, Dons fans. Ian here, and welcome to a special episode of Don the Stat. Before we introduce our guest, I'm joined as always by my co-host, Jonathan Walsh. Jono, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you, mate. Was lucky to squeeze an extra day off on Friday after the events of Thursday. I think I needed it. It was a pretty incredible day, but yeah, no, doing well, mate. Back to reality today, I should say. How are you, mate?
Yeah, pretty good. First day of the week and getting, starting to build up for our next challenge against West Coast. But before that, and with Anzac Day in the rearview mirror and almost a third of the season behind us, we thought it'd be a good idea to bring back what I'm calling the godfather of Don the Stat, Robert Shaw. For those who are unfamiliar, and there shouldn't be many of you who are unfamiliar with Shorey, Robert played 51 senior games for Essendon during the 70s and 80s, was a senior coach for both Fitzroy and Adelaide, and then helped mastermind the 2000 Premiership as an assistant coach. There, he encountered a young man by the name of Jay Walsh and mentored him into the analyst he is today. Robert, thanks for joining us again on Don the Stat.
G'day guys, how are you? And thanks for having me. Like, we'll call it a third of the way because we're pretty excited, so we'll jump a week forward anyway. So that's good.
That's it. Well, look, firstly, how have you been since we last spoke?
No, life's going well. A little bit of teaching, a little bit of footy, a lot of family, kids, grandkids playing sports. So a lot of trips to Melbourne. The odd social catch up with you blokes when we can all find a bar somewhere before a game, which is going very well, and semi-retirement, which is good.
That's good to hear. Well, look, we're going to spend most of the episode just talking generally about where the Bombers are at and where you've seen them since we last had you on. But we can't get you on here without getting your thoughts about what happened during Anzac Day. Jono and I will do our usual review during the Thursday preview show, but we have to hear your thoughts about how you saw the game playing out.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was a perfect storm, and both teams could have lost quite easily, and also could have won. I love the draw. Let's put that on the record. Okay, we have to work out what happens in draw in the finals, but we got a result, and there's three types of results: a win, a loss, and a draw. And both clubs deserve to come away with 2 points because it was would have been so easy for both teams to lose it. We saw so many variables in the game that influenced the result. Mychek inaccurate, Stringer inaccurate, Langford misses, Elliott drops a mark where he would have kicked a point. So you wrap all that up and you say, you know what, let's take the two and go home. And I think deep down, both clubs said, 85 points each, 90,000. I'll take two, you have two, and we'll see you next time. So I was delighted with the result, the game, the form of Essendon. So let's not try and overanalyze it. Let's look at the beauty of the game, all the things that can happen in a game, go wrong, go right. There's some great stuff from both teams. A magnificent start from Essendon. That was just exhilarating and as good as I've seen them play for a long time.
Yeah, I think that was the big positive for me. We've been dour in defence for a few weeks now, but we really exploded out and showed how dangerous we can be with the ball. I'm a bit like you, Shorey. I'm a fan of the draw. I think it's a genuine part of the game. I'm not sure I've experienced a game, or at least not an Essendon game, where a draw has felt as fitting as that. If you go back to the Crows game the week before, had we lost that, we would have really, or if it was a draw, we would have really kicked ourselves because of missed opportunities. Whereas with this one, sort of felt, I mean, it was equal on the scoreboard, of course, but both teams had their chances to win it. Both teams had their chances to lose it. Shake hands. What an incredible day, incredible spectacle.
And of course, prior to that, one of our significant weaknesses was something that I judge as very, very important. Nearly my key performance indicator, and that is percentage. And until that game, we were 20, 30, and in some cases, 40% behind some of the clubs. So thank goodness we got the 2 points, which at the moment, eliminates our percentage issue, which is low 90s. You look at some of these other clubs, 130, 40, and even 150. So thank goodness that happens, because a low percentage like that is one game, is a negative game. So that was good. That's another reason why the draw's good. Get rid of our percentage after that Port disaster. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess just before we wrap up looking at Anzac Day, how did you see the Anzac Day medal voting? Was it the person you would have chosen as the best on ground, or did you have someone else in mind?
Didn't even come close. I didn't think. I thought Andrew McGlar was clearly best on the ground. I'll tell you why. It was the best balanced game on the ground. He was sensational defensively on last year's Norm Smith medalist, who kicked 0-3. He had 10 intercepts and he set us up with attacking run. So from a pure football game of defence, attack and 50-50, right, I thought Andrew McGrath played the perfect game. And I know a couple of the scribes gave him best on ground, but he would have got my vote. And Merritt obviously in the mix. And a few of the Collingwood boys played particularly well too. But if you're looking at just, if we're looking at Essendon, to me it was McGrath for the reasons I've given. What a perfectly balanced game of football he played.
Yeah, we've struck a Don the Stat medal this year. We've named it after Jack Kirby, who you played a little bit before your time, Shorey, but he's known to be the first VFL AFL player to kick a goal with his first kick. So we thought it was a telling stat to name a medal after. And both Hume and I gave McGrath the three votes, and our Patreon subscribers also vote on the game, and most voted the same way as well. So yeah, he was certainly popular with Hume and I and those that listen to the show. Although I did see that Zach Merritt got the 10 coaches votes, so got five from both of the coaches.
Well, that's probably, you know, with the greatest respect to us and our listeners, if coaches that run the game, organise the game, select the game and view the game, have given it that way, well, who are we to argue? But we'll stick with what we thought and the reasons why we thought it.
Yeah, I think McGrath was third. So, Merritt, sorry, got 10. Majacek, 7. McGrath, 6. Langford, 4. And Darcy Moore, 3.
It's interesting. I thought Darcy Moore was hard done by. I thought he was unbelievable. And it just worries me. He's full back. McGrath's on a back flank. Surely the two coaches aren't falling for the old check the stat book, the highest possessions, Dacos, Merritt. I thought Moore was, and I forgot to mention him before, I thought he was unbelievable. Mm. And he would have figured in my votes, and Nick Dacos wouldn't have.
Actually,
my check would have been before Nick Dacos too.
Just sort of drawing back a bit on your past history, the coaches' votes and the coaches' award didn't come into existence till after your time as a senior coach. But you would have done a lot of voting on best and fairest for clubs. What were you looking for when you were giving best and fairest votes for players after a game?
Well, you can't go past games. Let me think of a game. Mercedes game in the preliminary final, right? 40 possessions, 4 goals from a centreman. You can't go past that sort of thing. But what I really like about the Anzac medal, it's nearly the best clubman or the spirit of the game. And if you look at it that way, then to me it was McGrath and Moore. They epitomised, they mightn't have been the best players on the ground or the highest stats, but to my way of thinking, they epitomise the true Anzac spirit medal without taking anything away from the marvellous captain we've got in Zach Merritt. We voted 5-4-3, everyone in Sheeds' match committee, myself, Harves, Terry, the great late Dean Bailey and Sheeds, we would vote 5-4-3-2-1. So you had the opportunity to give a 2-voter or a 3-voter to Mark Johnson. you know, for his job on Jeff Farmer, whereas Macedo or Hurd might get the five. That sort of gave you a really good spread about recognising really great two performances. And clubs do it. There's so many different ways of doing it. I didn't mind that because five blokes voting, 5-4-3-2-1, you shouldn't miss.
Well, look, let's turn our attention to a bit more broader look at things. And look, last time we had you on was post the Carlton victory last season during the mid-season break. And the time before was after the Melbourne game. We were all up and about. And again, we've got you on again in a positive moment where we're feeling pretty good about the club. And when we had you on last time, we were all pretty excited about what was going on at that point of the year. The Bombers were coming off 4 wins in a row to sit in 6th spot. And obviously a lot changed from that point until the end of the season. How did you see the rest of the year play out from that Carlton game? And how were you feeling by the end of 2023 with where the Bombers were at?
I can't remember what happened. We fell away, didn't we? No, that was disappointing. But look, I move on pretty quickly, and I'm not sort of saying, you know, like the coaches spoke, oh, we reviewed it and we moved on quickly. There was a lot of work to do, and I'm sort of changing it to this year a little bit, Hume, I'm sorry. There was a lot of work to do, and there was a lot of stuff to understand from last year. And one of the things that has really excited and really pleased myself and Jono, because we've been harping on this for 10 years. We have been sick to death of opposition halfback flankers getting 3 Brownlow votes. Adam Saad, Lachie Whitfield. You can just keep going and going and going. But this is the best in, well, I can't remember when it's been this good for forward pressure, for attack on the ball at ground level, and keeping the ball in. I'll be stand to be corrected, Jono, but we now no longer, and God bless the bloke because he had a big heart, but we now no longer have the Snelling situation where he used to go up to the stoppage and a Lachie Whitfield would drop off and dominate the kick behind and setting up. We now look like, and like, I don't go to every game. I give my tickets to my grandkids and my daughters. So I watch a lot of on telly. So I can't see what you're seeing behind. But I doubt very, very much that we don't play 6-on-6 in our forward line, which gives you an opportunity and it allows these players not only to put pressure on and some of the stuff against Adelaide and especially last week was as good as I've seen for a decade, if not decades. And of course you add that with the other one that Walshy really likes is our clearance factor. And the influence our clearances have on our game and our results can somewhat be a fraction unhealthy because the decimation against Port, but the domination in the first phases of the game against Collingwood. So they're two areas that we have significantly improved in. The other area we've improved in is player positioning. And I just hope we don't fall for our shields back, you know, let's find a spot for Caldwell. No, you wait out there or wait on the bench because Durham and Caldwell, they're starting. That's a lock. And they have been fantastic. It's allowed Cox to go to the wing and do a little bit of versatile stuff. Dersma's been excellent. I was really worried with the Martin move back and the Durham move into the middle because one of our great strengths last year was the variation of our wingmen. You had Durham on one wing and you had Martin on the other. And I thought, gee, that's two strengths. Maybe we shouldn't change that. But the Durham move has been a masterstroke. And how do I say the Martin one? I'm still not on board fully with it. The reason being, I think he can be a better player and a more important player for us, wing, centre, half, forward. The reason being, all his kicks go inside 50. So there's three areas that I've really liked individually. Mackay, he got moved around last week by Majacek, so that's something, but he's been very good. Goldstein in the ruck's been diligent, experienced, strong. But can I move on to the match-winning move on the weekend was Draper back into his familiar and where he should play as our first ruck. We've got Goldstein as a backup ruckman, a teaching ruckman, a support ruckman for Draper and young Brian. I don't know where Brian's going, but I do know he'll probably be at St Kilda next year as the second ruck playing with Marshall. Because, so I'm just glad Draper's back in and Goldstein can go back to doing what he's. I don't think he'll go to Perth this weekend. It's pointless taking Todd Goldstein to Perth this weekend. Am I going? I'm not waffling, but I'm.
No, you're, on a roll.
I'm on a bit of a roll
because we don't want to stop you because you
okay
giving us a lot of gold. We know, and now I think you've guaranteed we'll get picked up. Now you've given us the hint that Brian's going to St Kilda. That'll get picked up.
No, that was just right off the top of the head. He's not getting a game. He's always been a backup. I saw him play against St Kilda. Why I thought of St Kilda, was it a game last year, Walshy, at Marvel, or the year before, where he played a terrific game? He rucked and he went forward. He marked and he kicked beautifully. If Goldstein's taken that role, then Brian's gone back a step. So if I was his management, because I've got a gut feeling that Goldstein will go again. I don't know whether he should, but I've just got a gut feeling if he continues that this year, he'll be asked to go again, which puts the young Nick Bryan in limbo, which I thought our premiership or our future was Draper and Bryan. But I get while, you know, because Phillips went, and in comes Goldstein to replace Phillips and do that heavy-hitting role and support role. I'm not sure. Let's wait and see. He's been terrific, but let's wait and see. I think I made myself clear.
That Brian game, I think that Nick Bryan game might have been the Swans late in the year last year, where he's probably the best ruckman on the ground, yeah. I want to unpick a couple of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, mate, if I can. So just on clearances and contested work, so just to put some numbers to it for everyone's benefit, center clearances, I'm just looking at the first seven games last year, so comparing apples to apples. First seven games last year, we were minus 0.57 center clearance differential. That's now up to plus 2.7 to be ranked second in the AFL. Stoppage clearance differential has gone from minus 1.4 to plus 2.86 to be ranked fourth in the AFL. And contested possession has improved from plus 0.86 to plus 5.43, which is also ranked fourth in the AFL.
So that confirms we know what we're talking about.
I hope so. I want to pick up, mate, on...
Walshy. You know what? You're doing, mate... I taught you well. Watch the game first, then go back to the stat for confirmation. We've talked about what we thought was happening. Now, I'll don the stat up. It comes with the forensic evidence of the stat first. Too many people, you know my philosophy. Everyone goes to super coach and the stats first. Now, watch the game. So, good. We got that one right. How are we going with our forward pressure?
Actually, before we get to forward pressure, let me throw one at you, mate. So we put a video together for our subscribers over the weekend of that contest and ground ball work on the weekend. The thing that I like about it isn't just that we're winning it, but we're winning it one at a time. So we're seeing a real pattern when we're playing good footy. It we fall into bad habits at times, but it's one and in at the contest at the time rather than swarming on the ball and then not having any protection if we lose it or not having anyone to pass the ball to if we win it. We've got a real structure around it by going in one at a time. And one of our listeners made a comment about Jai Caldwell's comment post-game. I didn't hear it myself, but he made a comment about a real trust that's being built amongst the group on our ability to go and win those one-on-ones and win the ball. Is that something you've seen yourself, and how do you think that can now, if you were back in the coach's box, how would you use that to build, continue to build that confidence in the playing group and make sure that that doesn't drop off?
Well, we've looked at our midfield setup for the last 10 years and it's been disjointed. It's been one way. This is the best balance I've seen. So I can understand what he's saying. And with balance comes roles and understanding of roles. And it also comes with trust and belief. And what we're seeing is a really good, deep midfield. Okay, we had one shocker. Okay, and those three Port blokes were at the top of their game. But apart from that, we've been really well organised, really well balanced, and we've got our wing situation set up because Kelly's not a wingman, nor should he ever play on wing. He's got a specific role if he does get a game, and that's to play on Waitman. That's your job. Stop Waitman. You've got one job. You're not flexible. You don't have the flair or the play on skills or the kicking to play on a wing at AFL football. But you have a very important role to do, which we've seen him do. So what'll happen? We'll wait and see what happens when Reed and Ridley and that come back. But there's no reason why he cannot keep playing that game. So go back to your midfield. Dersham has been really good. The Cox on the other wing looks to be maturing slowly, where he can drop back into the back line. He can go forward and have a shot for goal. He is a wingman. When he came into the game, we were so excited about him as a wingman. And with injury and indecisive, I guess, selection, they finally got him right, I think. And his flexibility now, forward wing and a little bit of back, is very important. I think you've summed it up. Our midfield has great trust and great belief, and they're all a little bit different. Whereas in the past, we've been noted as our midfield, forget names, but our midfield all one way. And now it is a perfect balance, contested, flair, kicking, toughness. And then when he does come back, you've also got an X-factor midfielder in Archie Perkins. So it's looking quite good there and very, very competitive with the rest of the competition.
Yeah, and, as you say, it's exciting to have that because we haven't really had that midfield that can do it, not only do it, but do it consistently. There have been one-off games for our midfield. Everything's clicked and everything's worked well, and we've got the win from that. But with the spread of players we've got and the types of players that we've got now, we can deal with a lot more scenarios. And when one player is down, there's a lot more people who can pick up the slack. We saw, not that anyone was down on the previous weekend, but we saw that when they want to, they can put Jake Stringer in there and he can have a major impact like he did on Anzac Day when he hadn't really been playing as a midfielder so far this year. Talking about players and moving players around.
Just a moment. Forgot Stringer. You're right. And the coaching, he's done that before, but it looks to be a specific role for him now. And you've got Durham and Caldwell, who are, in what my opinion, natural one-on-one players. Like, if you didn't give them any instructions for a game, they would go out and play hard one-on-one. Like Durham will go out hard one-on-one this week on Yo, and Corbell will go hard one-on-one on, say, a Kelly. So they create an automatic contest without you telling them you're tagging. So it's a natural part of their game, which is beautiful. But then the runner can come out and say, mate, Elliot Yo's had 8 this quarter, just put the brake on him a little bit, So you've got that wonderful flexibility.
Yeah, and I guess sort of touching on flexibility a bit more, you mentioned Ridley and Reed potentially to come back. You also touched on the fact you're still not 100% sold on Nick Martin being in that back line going forward, and we saw him go forward in that last quarter in that the Pies game and have a big impact. I guess once Ridley and Reid are back, Ridley is obviously a certain selection. Is Reid a certain selection for you? And if both have to come back in, how do you accommodate both of them?
Well, it is selection. Ridley will come back in for Kelly. He should, because he adds a wonderful dimension of intercept mark. Nothing against Kelly, but Ridley, his relationship with Mackay will be sensational. That's elite. You've got the old stay-at-home, strong marking fullback, old-style fullback, and you've got this wonderful intercept player. Right, so someone's got to miss out. It becomes down to Reid and Laverty, and we'll let that one work out. But the back line's going very, very well. Redmond's not as dynamic as he has been in previous years. I was a little bit concerned they were going to use McGrath as a pure stopper, but with Kelly, this is why, even though he's probably has to go out of the side at some stage. If he does the lockdown job, like this week, who kicked two goals? He's got to go to Cripps, doesn't he, Walshy, off the top of our head? I can't
Yeah,
think.
Cripps or Liam Ryan, I guess that depends on how those two line up.
And let Andrew. I was surprised they played McGrath on Hill. That just tells me that probably they were worried about Hill's pace, fair enough on Kelly, whereas McGrath can get him four pace, but also do a good defensive job. It'll all play out. There'll be more injuries, blokes will miss out. They'll adjust the side. And I'm not against Martin playing in that role because what I love was him going forward. So that was fantastic. I just think he's under a lot of pressure in the back line. They're starting to look at him. And when he does kick the ball, he can be under pressure. Whereas midfield wing forward, I think his kicking is far more dynamic inside into 50 than it is coming out of 50, if that makes sense. So that's not a knock on the selection. You understand why he's doing it. That's where Dacos started at half back. It's got a little bit of that theme in it, but I'm not against the move. I just think we could actually get better.
Yeah, I think he's someone who's better kicking when he's got less of the field to look at. I think he's got really good instincts, but the
Well,
more
that's a
ground he
great.
has to look at, I feel like he overthinks it. Whereas when he's forward or centre, it's bang, there's my option, and he normally chooses the right one. He said, yeah, a lot of his mistakes seem to be where he second guesses himself, and you get less of that the closer you are to goal, I reckon.
And there's also more people in your vision coming off half back than there is if you're just forward of the centre square. As you said, it's a great summation for our listeners. Kicking forward simplifies Martin's decision, whereas coming off half back, he's probably got four or five options with his great vision that he can see. And I think you've summed it up really well, Walshy.
It'll be interesting to see how that evolves once Ridley does come back, because he's been the main distributor, him and Redmond, for a long time, hasn't it? So yeah, maybe that's the domino effect that gets Nick Martin up the ground a little bit more, or at least sees him play more of a flexible role. How do you make balance up? It's probably still a few weeks away before we have this problem, but there's two kids that we haven't seen a lot of for various reasons. One's Zach Reid, and the other's our number five pick from 2022 in Elijah Sardis. How would you tackle the approach of getting games into kids and two of our, biggest talents versus, best 22 and then picking a side to beat a particular opposition on any given week?
It's a great question, and you can't help how you're taught as a young coach or your philosophy in a club. We both know, and you'll smile, the first bloke picked on Anzac Day last week with an old coach of ours would have been Sartis. He would have played, and Hind wouldn't have. Now, I'm sounding as though I'm critical. I'm giving people an insight into the thinking of one of the greatest coach of all time. If there is a spot there, and there was a spot, Kevin would have played Sarcis. Because playing at the MCG against Collingwood off the subs bench or on the interchange in front of 90,000 Collingwood Essendon supporters, Anzac Day, compared to 10 games at Coburg, Casey, Frankston, Williamstown, nothing against these clubs. Who's your next 100-game player? And Walshy's smiling because he's heard that. Who's your next 100-game player? So I would play, my opinion, I would play, if there's a spot, like you've got a Hind or someone like that, I would always play Sarcis. He's pick five. He's in his second pre-season. He's in his second year. And he's not pick 45 or 55. He's pick five. This is an elite decision by list management that must be complemented by selection. And you can't tell me picking Sarcis on the weekend over, say, Hind. And sorry, Nick, I'm not being critical of you. I'm just using you as an example. Would make no difference to the game at all. And you would have got that game's experience into him. The other decision is Reed, who looked fantastic. And you know, Ridley, you've got to get that quad right, mate. It's a shocker. And he's had it, what, twice now? 2 years? Or hamstring? Two
Yeah,
quads.
well, yeah, three.
Yeah. They're no good. They are no good. They're the worst one. You can get over a hammy and a quad because a quad not only is a running muscle, but it's a kicking muscle that contracts really hard and just tears. So I think it'll be, I like Laverty. I think he's hard done by some of our punters. I think he's diligent, tough, hardworking, and he's always doing a job where he's out of height or out of weight, batting, you know. So, but it will come down to him and Reed at some stage because Ridley, or so your combination will be Mackay, Ridley, Reed, on him in his second year. And he had a good game on the weekend, and so did Scheel. So that's the interesting one. Because Scheel can't go back and play the way he used to. As I think I read where you said people were saying to you, Walshy, well, what do we do with him? Well, there's a high half forward, there's a bit of wing, there's an interchange, there's the odd centre bounce. He has to become a four position player. He's no longer the centreman for Essendon, the elite midfielder. Not in this side, not with Caldwell, not with Durham. Your role is to be a four position a full role player, and you're in our best 23. But if you are interchange half forward wing, little bit in the centre, and that's your role, and how important could he be? If he gets fit and informed playing that role, that is complementary to what we have now, because Don the Stat has decided Durham and Caldwell ain't going nowhere, and that's locked in. And we've sent the message to the hangar. You can do whatever you like with Scheel and Archie and all those blokes, but you're not touching them too.
Yeah, I think
I
just
think
remember.
those two guys have decided that, haven't they? They're not giving up their spots
Nah.
anytime soon, which is great to see.
I think just touching on the Scheel as sort of that half forward, he did that role a little bit at the start of last year and did pretty well from memory. He had a couple of games
Yeah.
where he kicked a couple of goals, so he's obviously worked on that. And yeah, I think he's potentially an upgrade on say a Hobbs, particularly in terms of forward delivery. And so this could potentially be the way that he gets into the side.
Yeah, well, there are options, but you know, as I said, you've also got to decide on the role of Hobbs, what he's doing, and I just have a just a philosophical, you know, about dropping your good kids. You know, can I just say something? And while I'm pushing Sartzis and Hobbs to an extent, I want to take 10 seconds to read, because there's a fallacy out there. There's a myth out there that, we're a young developing side. That is the greatest load of bullshit I've ever heard. McGrath 140, Merritt 212, Parrish 150, Goldstein 320, Langford 130, Shield 211, Gresham 136, Laverty 110, Wright 120, Heppel 240, Stringer 190, Redmond 110, Kelly 150. Young, developing? This is an experienced side, folks. And Draper, Corwell, can't read my own writing, Perkins, Mackay, Martin and Durham are all over 50. Remember the old saying, Walshy, takes you about 40 games to get your bearings in AFL football? The only young kids I see are Cox, he's got 40 already. So's Hobbs. Young Davies, half a dozen. It's a very, very seasoned, experienced side. But make no mistake about that, because you want stats, I've just given you games per player.
Yeah. And I also think the AFL is trending older as well. It's not, you look at the last two premiership sides, so Geelong, obviously, you know, Army, and everyone's talking about them. Collingwood weren't a young side. You know, I think players, and you sort of touched on Goldie before, that you potentially think he could go on next year. Players are able to play longer because of the way in which, you know, the recovery is going and the way they manage themselves. We're seeing, you know, Dyson Heppel's playing across the last year and a half, probably playing the best footy of his, since pre-saga almost. I think we're still in a mindset where a player hits 30 and they're done. I think the way in which the AFL is going, players potentially have a lot more longevity if they look after their bodies right. So I agree we're not a young side anymore. And I also think that that's not necessarily, you know, means we have to win right now or we're stuffed. We've got a bit more of a time based on that, but also we shouldn't just write off efforts because we're supposedly young. Because
I'm trying to, Walshy talked about confidence playing together. You can see the confidence starting to develop playing together the more games you play. A lot of these blokes have played, you know, I'd love to have the figures that they had, you know, of games played. So it's a great point about the competition, the old dad's army. But, you know, you look at Geelong, just that beautiful balance of those younger type players, Holmes, Myers, Clark, and those sort of blokes. Just give them a nice edge. And the old bloke keeps breaking down with the hamstring, doesn't he? The captain, Dangerfield. So.
Dangerfield, yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Well, look, we're going to move on to some Patreon questions. We asked our people who donate to us if they had any questions for you. We've picked out a few, and you talked about captains, and this one comes from Christopher Smith, and he's talking about our captain and the fact that he looks like he's elevated his game again this season and how captaincy seats well with him. I guess, given your experience, the only traits in him from afar that you saw in other successful captains you've worked with in your time in footy?
Well, yeah, certainly. I've forgotten the phrase you use when you're quite confused while he was dropped out of the leadership group 3, 4, 5 years ago. Was he too young? I get the gut feeling, I don't know, that he was what he is now. Bloody demanding and setting of high standards. And maybe a few of them got their nose out of joint. There's no reason why such a bloke with, as Brad Scott says, elite standards should not be in a leadership group, even if he's a quiet person. Because you can always refer to the way he trains, not the way he talks, but the way he trains. So I think his captaincy is developing fantastically well along with his game. His captaincy hasn't affected his game. It's enhanced his game. Whereas taking the captaincy off Heppel enhanced his game. So we've had a win-win there. The interesting thing, and I've had this discussion with Walshy before, if he wins 8 Crichton medals, doesn't play in a premiership and doesn't win a final, where is he in the Essendon Hall of Fame of players? And I think the club have let him down, because right now the difference between Zach Merritt, who's a wonderful player, and I know Reynolds, Hutchison, Coleman, Terry Danaher, Tim Watson, Simon Madden, Bill Hutchison, who else am I talking? James Hurd. You know where they've got him? Big performances in September. Every one of those players have a CV that says, I performed in September and I played in premierships for the Essendon Football Club. And this young fella's been denied that for a lot of reasons, and we can highlight them. But the way the club has operated has let Zach Merritt down, because you cannot judge a person. You can judge their individual year on Crichton medals. You cannot judge a career, I don't think, until you are a consistent, until you go and get in the car park into the MCG in September. And that's where the other blokes have got him. Because Walshy quite rightly backing him up, saying, could he put himself in the top 10, you know, at the end of his career? Well, he could quite possibly win more Crichton medals than anyone else. But unless things change significantly, I wouldn't have him in the top 10 and probably even further out. And that's very sad, and not an indictment on him, an indictment on our football club.
I think the decision to remove him out of the leadership group at a time where we had, you know, the likes of Joe Danaher and Orazio Fantasia in the leadership group, who have now, you know, left and moved on to other clubs, I think that says a lot more about that.
Yeah, I beg your pardon. Yeah, keep going. I'd skim over that very quickly.
Yeah, I was going to. I think that's much more of a reflection of the club at the time rather than Zach.
I was trying to say with my analogy. And all of those blokes that I've mentioned have got best on grounds in either finals or grand finals. You know, you miss Ken Fraser. Like, I don't feel sorry for him. It's a hard school, AFL football. But he cannot do any more than what he's done. He's now an elite midfielder in the competition. He's one of the best captains in the competition. He should win another Crichton medal and get in an All-Australian. We've got to get this bloke into the second or the third week of the finals to cement his standing in the history of the Essendon Football Club. Because he's 28. Right?
Yeah.
Isn't he? 27, 28?
Yeah, like I think he's about that.
Anyway, I do feel sorry for him, and I do feel a little bit annoyed for him. Because not to be in that leadership group with some of the names mentioned is an extraordinary decision by some people. Anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't like him putting it on them. Maybe he just didn't like him. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's it, man. I really do.
They didn't vote for him because he hurt my feelings. You know, he was very direct and strong at me. Okay, righto. Carry on, Hume. Great question. From who?
From Chris.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah. I hope I haven't upset you, but that's okay.
That's all right. Well, look, another chance here. This one's from Matt Becker. We've talked very positively about where Essendon is at. Yep. I guess, and you know, your you have less excuse. You give the club less excuses given the nature of their list in terms of what they could possibly accomplish this year. Based on what you've seen, what are the major things that may be holding the current Bombers back from pushing for, you know, we are in the eight now, but to sort of lock that in for this final series, or even push for a top four spot this season? What are the things that stand out to you that are lacking at this stage?
It's a great question. And if you had a look at it, like, I've got us down as I had a loss to the Swans. I had a loss to Port Adelaide, not by 12 goals, by about 17 points. And I had a loss to Collingwood. And I didn't know where the Dogs game sort of was. So I've got us plus one on budget. If I looked at the competition and jump in and agree or disagree, and I'll be blunt, I'll just say either better than or not. Sydney are better than us and Geelong are. Port Adelaide, look, I'm just going to hold fire on that at the moment. I know they thrashed us, but they're one of the most inconsistent type. I think the Blues are ahead of us. Collingwood, GWS and Melbourne are. And then there's Brisbane, who are having a bad year, and Gold Coast, who are sort of coming. I see us. I had us in the middle six at the start of the year. We are plus one for where I thought we would be. And I think 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 is our strike zone. And I'd actually be disappointed right now if it was 10. But you have the Swans, Geelong, Port, Carlton, Collingwood, GWS and Melbourne. That's 7. You've got Brisbane just out and playing poorly, Gold Coast, and then Essendon. It is tight at the top.
So I guess
can't see us, if we continue this consistency, we get some balance in selection. You need a little bit of luck with injury and a little bit of some wins at selection when Perkins comes back and Ridley comes back, but someone else might go out. The Stringer might do a hamstring. Draper might get hurt. So I've got us right in the mix, apart from about 5 clubs that are better than us.
So I guess what do you see as the big difference between us and those 5 clubs you have as ahead of us?
Well, you name Geelong, age, experience, finals, Swans, forever, Blues of Collingwood of the Premiers, GWS. Right now, Sydney played Geelong in the grand final just from GWS. That's tomorrow's grand final, right? With GWS. And you brought up, and what's the difference with us? Getting games played. As Walshy said, one of the first questions you said, trust and confidence in each other is growing by the minute. We've just got to go to the West Coast and go round the course, the 18 holes, in regulation. If the West Coast Eagles game is a par 72, we've got to nail par 72. We can't have a 78, and I don't think we're going to have a 67, right? They've got a lot of confidence back. Their senior players are starting to play well. I like our back line. The rucks will sort themselves out. The forward line is creative. It's volatile, it's temperamental, it's exciting, it's hard to play on. So if we can keep building our midfield and have a great second half of the year from Draper, we've got the ammo to match these sides, right? So that's going to be very, very interesting. I would be dismayed, shocked and surprised if we fell away in the second half of the year, as we have religiously done for whatever. So I see it. That's why I named those experienced players, 15 or 16 of them. We have a core now of stable, confident, experienced players. We are not quite there, but how's this competition? Let me ask you a question. How's the competition going? It's some average units in there, isn't it? There's people that haven't found form. There's young sides coming on, going backwards. The experienced campaigners are still there. Sydney, Geelong. I think Collingwood will be, they wouldn't want to get any more injuries. Melbourne and GWS. Port, hit and miss. Can Brisbane catch up? I don't know. I'm as confident as I have been for 12 to 15 years. Certainly 10. Let's say 10. Because the last 10's been a disaster. And the sun's coming out. Like, it was a beautiful day down here at Swan Bay. The sun came up. There was a cloud, and all of a sudden, that sun's coming out from behind that cloud, and we should be right in it. Now, please don't drop this game. You know, just win. Pardon me. I hope I've answered your question. I'm waffling. I'm going hoarse, so I must have talked a bit. I've enjoyed this. This is good.
I agree with most of what you said there. Well, all of what you said there. I think the difference with us and where we are still developing is that the top sides have a level of experience, star power that we just don't have. You know, as good as Dyson Heppel and Jake Kelly has been over the last couple of weeks, they're not Tom Hawkins and Jeremy Cameron and those guys, you know, Tom Stewart at Geelong. And we don't quite have, other than Zach Merritt at the moment, our next line of genuine star players, I guess Jake Stringer we could probably include there, are still developing. You know, can Perkins come in and be the star midfield forward that we think he might be? Can Reed be that player? Can Cox go to another level? Durham and Caldwell, these guys, they're playing good footy now, but can they continue to elevate themselves? Nick Martin is another one in there. So I think that's the bit for us that's the gap between, being at the team, like you said, Shorey, in that sort of middle six bracket to pushing to be in the top four or five, is that group of guys that have now played 40 to 60, 70 games, probably include Ben McKay in that as well. You know, can they, how many of them can be in contention to be in the All-Australian 40 squad over the next, 2 to 3 seasons consistently? I think that's the question mark for us on where we need to develop.
And a bloke that could really help that is, we need Parrish back to his elite clearance best, right? And I was at the Port Adelaide game. He looked unfit and he looked heavy and he looks slow. And those three elite midfielders, elite young kids, just cut him up. So he's an improvement coming on too. And I think we're more resilient. We're definitely stronger and tougher, without being, the edge stuff and all that sort of thing. Not sure about that, because toughness is just intent and your mindset and your attack on the footy, and we've certainly improved in that area. And we're not having big scores, apart from that Port Adelaide one, we're not having big scores kicked against the Swashy, which is really important. And now we don't need that... unless we fluke another draw from somewhere, we don't need that average percentage that we've got. Anyway, so I've got us in the top. At the start of the year, I probably had us in the bottom half of the top of the middle six. I think looking at how some of the other clubs are going, I see us edging to the top half of the middle six. Confusing, I know.
Might need some sort of diagram to work that out. But I think, you know, you're sort of touching on where we're sort of in that 7 to 9 bracket. You're sort of where you're sitting is seeing us at the moment.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, and I'm another one that disagrees with the, what's the point of making the finals and going out in the first week? Well, I disagree with that because I think September experience is a damn sight better than Ibiza or Bali.
Well, yeah, like I touch on Richmond a bit because I see parallels with where they were at when Hardwick came in and where we sort of have been at. And, you know, they made three consecutive final series without winning one. But then when they got it right, you know, it didn't matter. They hadn't won one. They still had that finals experience, were able to get through and win that flag in 2017. So even just getting there and, you know, you want to win, but getting that experience at all is still valuable.
Walshy's point worries me. Elite talent, Dustin Martin, Jack Riewoldt, Lynch. Is Lynch the full forward that's always injured?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Rance, Rioli. Yeah, elite. Are we lacking on our list management elite talent? It looks like it. So we've got to compensate elsewhere. We don't have Dustin Martin or Hawk, as you said, Hawkins, Tom Stewart. We don't have, I was going to say Toby Green, but Jake Stringer, yeah. The two big fellas, Curno and Mackay, have got us covered. So there you go, yeah. That's why this Heaney, it's just we're missing one or two at the absolute pointy end. I think Walshy summed it up well. And if people want to look at our list, well, that appears the difference at the moment. So we've got to compensate. And the way we're doing that is by the use of players, as we've spoken about, of Caldwell and Durham, and manufacturing our team and moving our team and putting Martin back. Okay, I don't like it, but that doesn't matter. Put him back, you know, get Ridley alongside Mackay, and you can shore up these areas where you may well be lacking an absolute A+. I've got an A-pluser in merit. I've got a lot of Bs, good footballers. So anyway, are the kids asleep yet? Hear me?
No, they're well asleep before we started. Not this. Good. Well, look, I think we'll sort of end it there. And
okay.
Look,
I'm very happy with that.
That's all right. Well, thanks so much for joining us tonight. We appreciate giving up your time to share your thoughts with us, and hopefully we'll have you back on later in the season. Any final words you'd like to say before we wrap up?
No, I'll see you at round, 16, 8 and 8, 16, when we're still consistently seventh. That's what we like, just there. No, thanks for that, Walshy. Thanks, Hume, for having me on. So what have I got? I've got Nick Bryant of St Kilda. I've dropped Jake Kelly.
And Nick Hind.
And Nick Hind, right. That's so right. Yeah. I haven't had much input at all, have I? I think it's gone well. We had a great chat.
That's
good. We covered everything. Oh, and I haven't got Zach Merritt in Essendon's best 10 of all time. So, folks, I wasn't being negative. It's just me. That's how I call it.
That's all right.
And
you might have some awkward past players functions coming up in 10 years' time when those guys have retired.
Well, I don't care. If they retire with two premierships, then we've nailed it, Walshy.
Absolutely. See you, boys.
Thanks, Don the Stat. See ya.
Cheers. Fantastic. Thanks, Shorey. Well, look, thanks to you, Jono, as well, for putting in an extra shift this week.
No, my pleasure, mate. Good to have Shorey on. Good to catch up with you again too, mate. Twice in 1 week. It's going to be fun.
It is. Well, look, Jono and I will be back on Thursday night with our regular preview as the Bombers fly across the country to play a resurgent West Coast. Until then, everyone, stay safe and go Dons.